From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something that you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome into this second edition of the Oxford Exxon Podcast for the day. I'm Neil McCready. Today on this particular episode, it's Chris Landry of Landry Football. We talk a lot of college football, a lot of Ole Miss football, the viability of football in COVID. I'll talk about that in a minute. We also talk some Arch Manning. We talk some NFL with some of the players announcing yesterday and over the weekend that they are opting out of the 2020 season as is allowed via their agreement between the NFL Players Association and the NFL itself. So NFL training camps scheduled to begin this week, and a lot of players are opting out. Not a big surprise. It's news whenever it happens, and so you see a lot of headlines, but it's not surprising that some players with pre-existing conditions or players with young families or players who just had a baby or whatever, that they're opting out of the season. Not surprising to me at all. So we'll get to all that in a minute. Earlier in the day, we released a podcast with Josh Hendrickson, associate professor of economics at Ole Miss, about an hour and 12 minutes talking to him. I really enjoyed the conversation. I mostly just listened to him, one of the smartest people I know. So that's available at the Oxford Exxon Podcast, MPW Digital, wherever you listen to podcasts. That's out. You can listen to two of our podcasts today. It's been about 47 minutes talking to Chris, so that's going to be the bulk of today's podcast. And then Chase Parham and I will have a hand raise guys, tomorrow afternoon. We're going to do it around 4 o'clock Central Daylight Time. I'm losing my voice today. No idea why. I think I'm just kind of losing my mind. So we'll have that for you tomorrow as well, and then we'll put that up as a Friday podcast so that you can have that in podcast form on Friday morning. And Zach Berry and I taped a soft verbal podcast yesterday. Martin Palomo and I taped a Mind on My Money podcast as well. There's a Greatest Pod in the South. So there's all of that. And then I'm taping a Beer Garden on Friday morning. We'll get that to you at some point Friday as well. So your full complement of MPW Digital podcast coming your way here on the network. We also have my mailbag will be up probably by the time you hear this. It is it's brought to you by Whitney McNutt of Tommy Morgan Incorporated Realtors. She's serving you for all your real estate needs in Oxford and Tupelo. She sells condos, land, commercial, and residential family homes. 662-567-2573 or 662-842-3844. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, and I'll tell you about that in a minute. But first, I do want to tell you about the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford, right next door to the Oxford Crystal. I'll tell you about that in a moment as well. Download the SpeedPass Plus app on your phone. You can fill up touchless at the Oxford Exxon, or you can go in. Great rib specials, great plate lunches, beer, soda, snacks, always clean, always nice. They've been great to us. I know that a lot of you over the years have been great to them as well. If you're coming into Oxford, leaving Oxford, great place to fill up, perfect place to fill up. And if you live around here, we'd appreciate you making that place for where you keep your car full, where you keep yourself full. And speaking of keeping yourself full, you can do that at the Oxford Crystal right next door to the Oxford Exxon. Uber Eats, Grubhub's available. Drive-thru is available, of course. They've got the peach slushy, the banana pudding shake, the fresh cracked egg biscuits with bacon, egg, and cheese, sausage, egg, and cheese, the scrambler breakfast bowls, the pick five for $5.55, and, of course, the new Southern-style chicken strips. All of that there at the Oxford Crystal, right next door to the Oxford Exxon, Highway 6 West in Oxford. I mentioned coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios, Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900 is the number. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what Ford product you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes and business hours. It's that simple. It's right to the bottom line. No hassle, no haggle. You get your quote, and the rest is up to you. You can shop that quote around, or you can do what I've done. Let's hop into a Clark Ford. You'll love the service. You'll love the product. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll prove that to you when you make the call. 662 257-1900. Josh Hendrickson, Chris Landry, all guests join us on the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. Rafters on the Water is open. It's basically a big party every weekend. It will be one this weekend as well. At the Sardis Marina, you can go experience outdoor dining unlike any place in North Mississippi. Shrimp, catfish platters, gourmet burgers, po' boys, it's all there. Signature appetizers, Zydeco shrimp, crawfish egg rolls, live music, fun cocktails, including their famous house frozen margaritas. You can also get to go and curbside. It's perfectly fine. They can handle that for you there at Rafters on the Water. 662-712-6162. I know a lot of people out there are expecting an announcement from the Southeastern Conference at the end of the week. Greg Sankey earlier in the month said, you know, ideally there'd be an announcement about what's going to happen end of July. Well, the end of July is on Friday. I'm going to tell you that that announcement may come. I don't anticipate it based on things that I've heard, based on people that I've talked to, and kind of based on some of the tea leaves. The ACC said yesterday no big announcements coming. They want to wait for the Board of Governors meeting, which is, I think, August the 4th. They're still kind of looking at some things. It's my opinion, and it's pretty educated, not as educated as I'd like for it to be. It's not as sourced as well as I'd like for it to be, that the SEC is right now looking at three different plans. And one is an eight-game SEC schedule, which is the schedule that basically is on the table right now. One is an eight-plus-one schedule, the eight SEC games, and then one game against either a Big 12 opponent or an ACC opponent. Makes a lot of sense if you think about it. Let's South Carolina play Clemson. It lets Kentucky play Louisville. Let's Georgia play Georgia Tech. It lets games that are already scheduled, Vanderbilt, Kansas State, Ole Miss, Baylor, Auburn, North Carolina. I'm sure I'm missing one. Alabama, BYU, if that game gets finalized, they could let BYU count as a Power 5 opponent for the year. You got to make exceptions this year of all years. It's not about competitive balance and stuff. It's about fulfilling the TV contract and getting to the finish line. And then the other one that's out there, and I've heard this a lot over the last, I don't know, 6 to 8 weeks. I was telling a couple people this morning before I taped this that COVID time just feels weird to me. I can't remember whether something was 2 weeks ago or whether it was 8 weeks ago. Some of that might just be my age and me getting old and infirmed, but I don't think it's as much that as it is just COVID time. Just the last 5 months sort of all, in some ways it feels like it was just 2 or 3 weeks crammed together, and in some ways it feels like it was years. So I don't know when exactly I started hearing it, but I started hearing a lot of buzz about a 10-game SEC-only schedule where, obviously for Ole Miss's purposes, they'd pick up a home game in addition to the four home games that they have, and they'd pick up an away game in addition to the away games that they have. I don't know whether the schedules would be revamped. I'll be honest, I saw a schedule that got sent to me. No idea whether it was valid or not. It would make some sense logistically, especially to start the season, but it had Ole Miss opening its season at home against Mississippi State, which on the surface makes a ton of sense. From a TV standpoint, right out of the gate, you get a rivalry game. And from a logistical standpoint, obviously, Mississippi State could travel to Ole Miss day of a game. Buses, no planes, no hotels. Play the game and bus back. It's about a 2-hour bus ride, maybe less than that with the police escort. Makes a ton of sense. Have no idea whether it's valid or not. I'd have to call it a rumor at this point because I have absolutely nothing whatsoever other than an email to justify it. So total rumor would make some sense, but rumor. But the 10-game thing I don't think is a rumor. I think there's no question that the 10-game SEC schedule is very much on the clock, on the table as a possibility. It lets the SEC control completely all 14 teams. It prevents having to really coordinate with other leagues. It lets the SEC have information. It lets the SEC be able to move a game, much like you see with Major League Baseball, with what they've done with the Marlins, what they've done with the Phillies. The Nationals this week aren't going to go down to Miami. They're just going to have the weekend off. They can make up those games later if need be. it let Major League Baseball move some games around. It would let the SEC have something similar. If you were having to coordinate with the Big 12 or with the ACC or with the AAC, whatever, that'd be more difficult to do. If you just have an SEC-only schedule, and so maybe there's a week where Florida is scheduled to play Georgia, but one of the teams has a, quote, outbreak, end quote, and you say, hey, let's not play this week. We can move this game because it's those two teams. We can move that game to the end of the season, or we can move that game 3 weeks from now, or whatever the case may be. Much easier to manage that, especially when you're not having to worry about crowds and all of that stuff, hotels. Just much easier to manage if it comes to that. We'll see. A lot of buzz around the 10 game right now. I'll tell you that. Don't have any idea whether that's just because I'm getting some emails and some text and things, or whether there's some validity to it. I think there's a little validity to it, but I don't know how much, and it's hard for me to say. I don't anticipate a big announcement from the SEC this week. I think they're going to wait. I think they could wait till August the 15th or so. I've had people say, what's a drop-dead date? I don't know that there is a drop-dead date, but let's say you don't play the schedule till September the 19th. That's the opening weekend. You got time. Camps wouldn't start till August the 21st, 22nd. You've got some time. You don't have to do this the end of July. You could go to August 10th, August 15th. It's probably about as late as you can go from a planning and logistical standpoint. I thought it was interesting. Yesterday, Ohio State released to their season ticket holders a plan, 20% capacity at the Horseshoe in Columbus. 20 to 25% seems about right now at the most. Frankly, I'd be surprised today if there were fans in the stands. That could change in a month. 20 to 25% at Ole Miss would be somewhere between probably 12 and 16,000, I'm guessing, 14 to 16,000. At Ohio State, it's like 20,000. There's a lot of buzz about 25,000. It was Florida that had about 20,000 if you did that that model. So we'll watch and see. I think that's all the things that people are still looking at. I still maintain that the Power Five leagues would like to see the NFL training camps begin. Those are scheduled to begin this week, as I mentioned. I think they would like to see those happen. They'd like to see NFL training camps get to the contact portion of practice so that they can see what that means from a virus standpoint, protocols, that kind of thing. Where do they have problems? Where do they not have problems before SEC and ACC and Big 12 and Big 10 and Pac-12 schools get started? But at some point, you know, you got to make a decision to play games. The NFL is not going to have preseason games. So if you're going to open on time, which is that, in Oklahoma's case, August the 29th, which seems to me to be unrealistic. But if you're going to open in early September, you're not going to have the benefit of seeing the NFL play a game. You're going to have to go out, do it on your own. I do think that a lot of college administrators have probably taken some solace, some encouragement from what's happened with Major League Baseball this week, where they had a breakout on the Marlins. Major League Baseball tested all of the other teams. None of the other 29 clubs had a positive. That news came out yesterday. Only the Marlins. And as people have started tracking what happened with the Marlins were in Atlanta last week for some exhibition games before they traveled to Philadelphia to open the season. And it's being widely reported and rumored, and I believe it because it's true, that the Marlins went out in Atlanta. They went to clubs. Who knows what else happened, but they certainly did not follow protocol. They did not follow the safeguards that were laid out in their agreement with Major League Baseball and Major League Baseball Players Association. So they had a breakout. 17, 18 people in their travel party, including, I believe, about 14 players, tested positive. The Marlins right now are scheduled to resume their season on Monday, so they won't play the rest of this week. They've got a taxi squad full of players. They've claimed some people off waivers. They're going to resume on Monday. And if you're the college people watching this, that's encouraging. Major League Baseball did not say, hey, this just doesn't work. Let's shut it down. They continue to play a slate of games last night. The highlight of last night's games, by the way, if you haven't watched it, go look it up. Joe Kelly with the Dodgers got some revenge against the Houston Astros. He threw behind Alex Bregman. He threw behind Carlos Correa. Two teams exchanged words. The Dodgers, the victim of the Astros cheating scandal back in 2017 when the Astros won the championship, banging on trash cans and stuff. They defeated the Dodgers in seven games. The Dodgers still, understandably, have some ill will towards the Astros, and you saw some of that last night, that game at Minute Maid Park in Houston. No fans, but there was definite intensity there. So that was, if you're looking for something to watch this morning, just go find Joe Kelly, Astros, Dodgers. Pretty funny stuff. Nobody got hit. Nobody got hurt. But a lot of people aren't particularly happy. So, again, no announcement this week is my anticipation. I think we start really getting on the clock next week, maybe even the week after that. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Because if there is an announcement this week, it's a good announcement. I still anticipate a positive announcement. People say, are we going to have football? My answer is, I think so. Even though I know Mark Emmert had some things to say yesterday to Nicole Auerbach with The Athletic about things have to change. And he doesn't like some of the numbers and all that. Mark Emmert won't make this call. Conference commissioners will make this call. And conference commissioners are not going to walk away from this money until they have no choice, until it is just absolutely not feasible. And we're not to that point. We're nowhere close to that point. Right now, I think there will be football. Just don't know when. I don't know where. Don't know who it will be against. But I do think there will be football. I think Chris Landry thinks there will be football as well. We're going to get to him in just a moment. Before I do, let me tell you about Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. More than 30 years old, one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market as well. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. J-Lowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. The podcast is also brought to you by Dead Soxy. I mentioned the Soft Verbal podcast with Zach Berry. That's brought to you by Dead Soxy. You need to check out their new line of Dead Soxy no-shows. They're fantastic. They keep your feet clean and cool in these hot, muggy months. I love them. Game changer for me. They have 9 new styles to choose from, and you can find the style that fits your occasion. Use the promo code REBELGROVE at checkout. Get 30% off the best dress socks you'll ever put on. You can also check out their bundle packs that are currently on sale. You can add the promo code in addition to the already deeply discounted prices and get yourself a steal from Dead Soxy, deadsoxy.com. Make your day a soxy one. Don't forget, Blue Delta Jeans is proud to announce that they are hosting the second annual Delta Cup golf tournament. It's at Mossy Oak Golf Club. October the 16th is the Friday before what we all hope will be the Ole Miss Florida game at Vaught-Hemingway. Sunday the 18th, of course, is the Sunday after what we hope is that game. And there are still some spots available on the Sunday part of the tournament. You can get in touch with Tyler, that's T-Y-L-E-R, at BlueDeltaJeans.com to get more information to reserve your spot. There will be included for the registration fee will be green and cart fees, food and drinks on the course, and a brand new pair of phenomenal Blue Delta Jeans. Prizes up for grabs for holes in one, closest to the pin, and longest drives. Again, it's Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, at BlueDeltaJeans.com. All right, now let's go to the Rafters Music and Food Hotline. Chris Landry of Landry Football. Enjoy. Chris Landry joins us here on the podcast. Chris, it's been a little while. Hope you're well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good to be with you again, as always.
I'll start here because I hadn't talked to you about this since the whole we talked some, I guess, COVID stuff when it first happened, but now we're getting closer and closer to the end of July, the 1st of August, which traditionally means the start of a fall camp. NFL camps are supposed to begin this week. Looks like they basically will. Some guys are opting out, that kind of thing. if we weren't talking about a virus, we'd be getting really geeked up for the start of fall camp and the start of the college football season. Instead, everyone's kind of tentative about it. What are, I know you know virtually everyone in the sport. What is your thoughts?
Well, in some ways, I'm more confused than ever because I think no one really knows. I think we've all kind of talked with folks. I know that talking with coaches and administrators, they are preparing for every scenario, but they don't know which one is going to take place. I've kind of come to the conclusion that what people say doesn't really matter. It's trying to maybe piece things together what makes sense. What I don't know, and at least what I'm trying to figure out, is there's one of two things. I mean, to make things work, you either have to have them in a bubble, which, you know, the NBA does, the Major League Baseball does not. College football and the NFL do not have plans for that. You keep them in a bubble, that's the only way it's not going to spread. So if it's going to spread, then then what do you deal with it? How do you deal with it? Well, we've got 14 guys that's tested positive at Michigan State. We're going to shut it down for 2 weeks. Well, you certainly can't do that during the season. Or I guess you can, but then there goes your season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what the plan is. There's two things. You don't test them, so you can't test positive if you don't test them. Or you keep them in a bubble to where when you test them, you can prevent it from spreading. Other than that, I don't know where that puts us in terms of a season. I've always said getting it started is one thing. Getting through a season is another. I don't think it's going to be smooth at all. And I've, you know, basically for people who have asked, I don't anticipate, and I don't think anybody should have an expectation of having fans at games. And we'll just kind of see where it goes. I'm like anybody else, in desperate need. It is my life's work.
Yep.
For football. I have never in my life not had a football season at any stage. So this would be beyond weird. It would be devastating, and I'm hoping and praying that we have it, but I also have it in perspective that I hope we do things the right way, and I hope that the people that are in the decision-making powers that understand this stuff, and I certainly do not from a health standpoint, what type of impact and how things are going to, you know, best be made out for all involved.
You know, it's funny. I've got Twitter up, and I've been kind of following this deal with, of course, the Marlins and the Phillies. And we might be seeing a little bit of a blueprint. And everyone makes fun of Major League Baseball. And Rob Manfred is not the strongest commissioner in the league in the history of professional sports. There's no question about that. That being said, they kind of are presenting a little path forward there. The Marlins season has been paused. That's the word that they're using. The rumor is it's paused until Monday. The Phillies, who played the Marlins, are right now kind of quarantined. And Ken Rosenthal tweets that the Phillies have a plan. Major League Baseball has a plan where the Phillies would return to play Friday against the Blue Jays in Philadelphia as the visiting team. Under a previous plan that was due to the Jays' inability to play in Canada, the team would be isolated until then, not technically quarantined. Jason Stark quote tweets that and says, MLB is literally rewriting the schedule on the fly in order to keep the other 28 teams moving forward with some sort of a schedule. I know it's different with college players than it would be with pros. I understand that completely. But, you know, one thing you said, there's a lot of negatives for college football not having fans in the stands, financial and optics and other things. The one positive that comes with not having fans in the stands is it gives your schedule a tremendous amount of flexibility to move things around, to pause for certain teams, letting other teams continue on, to rearrange, to move the locale of the game. It does. In a season where the only goal is just to get to the finish line somehow, some way, you do have a lot of flexibility.
Absolutely, and it's the very reason why Oklahoma decided yesterday they got approval to do it, to move the Missouri State game, ironically coached by Bob Petrino, on August 29th. And the reason that they're doing it is simply to create another open date. So if there's positive tests, that's, you know, you all right, you've got to sit out these guys for 14 days or whatever. It gives you a little time to play with. Everybody's looking for time, and we're running out of time. But that's exactly the case. It's going to be a lot of maneuverability, a lot of trying to, you know, mix and match. And it's, you know, look, I think we're seeing some of the conferences, mainly the ACC and the SEC, but the Big 12's involved in trying to figure out, all right, look, if we can help each other from a scheduling standpoint, let's try to do it. Let's try to get all the games in. Obviously, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 are going to their conference only, and the model the Pac-12 came out with, we're going to play 10 games in league. So, yeah, everybody's kind of doing their thing, trying to figure this out. But I do think it's going to be a lot of, we're going to figure this out as we go type.
So you're down there in Baton Rouge. What are you hearing with LSU? And you know, they've coming off this historic season. They've got, I know, eight SEC games scheduled. They've got, I don't have their schedule in front of me. What are they looking at in terms of maneuverability, and what are you hearing?
Well, Texas is the only game that's relevant out of conference.
That's right. Texas comes to Baton Rouge, right.
And, you know, that is still in play with the Big 12 not opting out. I don't know that game's going to take place. I don't know that it's not. I mean, as it is now, I guess we just assume. But, again, we're you know, 5 minutes away from somebody making some sort of an announcement. There's a little bit, I guess, the only thing that really came out was during the summer, and I've lost track of time now, Neil. It's several weeks ago, maybe four or five. There was a spike, a big-time spike, around campus. Now, keep in mind, this is after the spring semester, which, by the way, was done virtually, and you know, but you still have kids. Once they open things up where you can go to a bar, boom. There was just this big spike. Well, all the students, you're familiar with the area, Tigerland and all that. So all of a sudden, it just spiked up. And so there were not 35 players testing positive, but 35 players that were exposed and I think were put into quarantine at the time. You know, we went to a phase one and then a phase two and had to go back to phase one. We still don't have a definitive answer on the high school schedule. In fact, it's, you know, they really need to rework some things if we're going to have it. But, you know, it's like anything else. The governor is very much pro sports. I do know that Scott Woodard is, you know, like anybody as any athletic director, trying to feel we need to have fans. We need pushing all that. And obviously the governor saying, look, you got to work with me here. We can't, you know, you're dealing too with lawsuits and everything as well. So you got to be very careful and, you know, dot your I's, cross your T's. But there's nothing definitive on how this is going to look from their standpoint. Nothing yet.
The Oxford Exxon podcast also brought to you by the Iron Horse Grill. Iron Horse Grill located at 320 East Pearl Street in Jackson. It's the perfect place for lunch, dinner, or Sunday brunch. Live music four times per week. They're also the sponsor of My Food for Thought, which comes out every Friday on rebelgrove.com. Again, 320 East Pearl Street in Jackson. We're also brought to you by John Edwards, Regency Travel Incorporated in Memphis. If you're thinking about a getaway, you're already planning a vacation around the holidays, maybe you're thinking about just blowing it out next summer in your post-COVID celebratory trip, make it one that you'll always remember. Let John take care of it for you. He's part of Virtuoso. It's a worldwide network of travel partners that allows him to supply his clients with added values, unique benefits, simply not available to other travelers. What you do is you get in touch with him, you give him some parameters, you give him a budget, he'll give you options. And you don't have to live in or near Memphis to take advantage of his services. 901-494-3387 or send him an email at jedwards@regencytravel.net. First-time clients can save $50 off their first booked trip just by telling John you heard about Regency Travel on the podcast. We're also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. Grenada Nissan located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada, Mississippi. They have a complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Great lease deals as well. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. Brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB. Locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB gives you the comfort of home. all the benefits the big mega banks provide, all the technology and products you can want, all with a personal touch. And they also bring you Kasasa. It's the absolute best cash checking account. With Kasasa, OUB will pay customers 2.5% interest on their balances up to $50,000 and refund ATM fees nationwide. To learn more, liveoxfordbankoxford.com or 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. And we're brought to you by Bluff City Advisory Group, dedicated to building the future you desire. Founded in Memphis in 2019, their team is comprised of established and seasoned financial experts who came together to serve individuals and families of their beloved hometown. They value providing quality advice and experience and access to all of their clients, and they invite an open dialogue beyond your annual review. You want to talk to them if you're in that Memphis area, 901-365-3447. Or Ben, B-E-N, at BluffCityAdvisory.com. And we're brought to you by the law firm of Bain, Moss, and Bowen, PLLC. Located in historic downtown Corinth, Mississippi, their firm practices a wider range of law, from DUI defense to car wrecks to representing government entities. It's the only firm in Mississippi made up of a sitting state legislator, a former assistant district attorney, and a former circuit court judge. Their experience is unmatched in that regard, and you can tap into that experience by visiting them at 618 East Waldron Street in Corinth or by calling them at 662-287-1620. Yeah, they got to do this at some point, right? Got to have an announcement sometime soon. I mean,
I think, you know, what I've heard for a while is that the 31st, and we all know that's this Friday.
Yeah.
So I would think, because I just, and I don't know if it was a definite, but, you know, if it's the last day of the month, but we're at the point where, you know, we've kicked the can down the road so much that we're running out of time. So now it's to this point is this could happen, this could happen. Well, now this is what's going to happen, because if you don't know something by the first of next week, then the start of those games at the end of August, first week, that's, you know, if we can't have the practices and the build up to it, then that has to be backed up. And so I think we're going to start to see that. And then we're going to see if, you know, who's on schedule, who's not, who's backed up. And it's just going to be a full time job keeping track of, you know, who can play, who can't. I would think a lot more of these. Look, the smaller colleges are having to deal with a situation in certain parts of the country. In New York, California, they're not going to play. Others know the importance of trying to play their checkbook games, you know. So it's everybody's got their own issues to deal with, but we're talking about a huge financial loss and an expenditure for how you're going to go about testing. Now, I get different things on testing. And again, we have no clear-cut way that we do things in college football, which is, I think, part of a bigger problem, and we can for another day that we can discuss. But
yeah,
it's, you know, everybody's going to do things their own way. So how often are you going to test? I mean, in the NFL, it's going to cost $75 million for testing. They've got it. Of course, they're going to lose a ton of money, and this is $75 million they did not budget for, but they've got it. But a lot of small colleges
cannot
afford to have a football season,
yep,
because the money that they make won't be enough to pay off the testing that it would take to have a season. That is not the case for our SEC schools and the like, but that's just going to further take the balance sheet into a negative angle, you know, further.
You just touched on something, and we're going to get to some football stuff because people get antsy about this COVID talk, but it is such a part of what we're doing and what the schools are doing and what the athletics people are talking about. They don't go an hour without talking COVID stuff because the financial ramifications and all these things of what have to happen. You're exactly right about testing. It's another reason why people say, what's the nightmare? I'll tell you the nightmare. The nightmare is that you start – you get through whatever a camp would look like, and I'm going to ask you about that in a minute. You get through what a camp would look like. You get through a game, two games, and have to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you've spent all this money on testing. The kids are on campus. You're having to feed them, obviously. You're having to do all the things with people to run a football program, which is a major operation. And now you've got to shut it down. And immediately the conversation becomes, well, are we going to try to pick this up in the spring? What are we doing? And if the answer is yes, we're going to pick it up in the spring. Okay, well then we can't close the doors. We got to keep this going, which includes testing. Because if they're all going to be around each other, you've got to keep testing. The only way that, and then if you shut it down for the fall, it's very hard to reopen it in the spring because then you got all the startup. It's just, it's a really fine line really to get done. And I don't envy the people that have to make the decisions because I think, and you see this with Major League Baseball, we're just talking about the Phillies and the Marlins. Once you get going, you have to be very dogged about we're going to keep going until we just can't keep going anymore.
Yeah, no, I agree. As I said before, you either take the bubble method or, you know, you just have to have, you know, testing that is maybe, and there's not a lot of transparency. You know, just, you know, I don't know that there'll be as many testing. I was told by an ACC, you know, official that, you know, that one of the plans with one of the schools is that, well, if they don't test positive in July, that there'll be 3 months before they test them again. Okay, well, that's one way to get around it. Just don't test them. No, you know, so if they're asymptomatic, then just go out there, boys, and play. I mean, it's one of the two because, yes, how do you deal with it? And, look, I've said this, and I've talked with a bunch of coaches, and I've told them, I said, you know, you guys, everybody's talking about the players, and rightly so, that's the most important thing. But as coaches, you better, you know, I talked to a head coach, I said, you know, recently, and I said, you know, you better be prepared that you better have two play callers for every week. So what happens if your defensive coordinator tests positive on Thursday and he's out? Well, your guy, you know, that is going to have to take over, I mean, you better be prepared for that. So he has to be involved in, you know, play calling during the game preparation during the week. And then the danger there is the likelihood if one coach catches it, the guy that's most likely to catch it is going to be the guy that's in the meeting room with him all day.
So you have to do the meetings via Zoom.
Well, that, or you certainly got to practice some good social distancing, and maybe you'll be like Mac Brown, and you have the six-foot sticks to where everybody carries around and separates them. I mean, you got to do something creative. This is not – it's just nobody really knows. You'd be wearing masks. You'd be doing things. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how transparent these tests are. When I hear that so-and-so had no positive test, the first thing I said, wonder what test they're giving them. You feel good, Neil? Yeah, I feel good, Chris. There you go, bud. Get back. You know what I mean? Is that the test? I don't know, but I don't know. I don't know how this can't spread, but I am hopeful and praying that like you, that we get this going. Stopping it is just be a disaster.
All right. Let me ask you this, because you know, a lot of coaches, you've been a coach, you've been around it. I know in an ideal world, I always talk about the ideal world versus the real world. In an ideal world, a coach has the spring. They finish the off-season program. The kids take a couple weeks. They come back in June. You've got the 7-on-7s that happen. You've got an off-season program that gets ramped up and ramped up and ramped up and ramped up. The kids are in great shape. About this time, you send them home for a week. Let them get away from you for a little bit, and then you bring them back, and then away you go. And you've got 2 days in shorts, 2 days in shoulder pads, and then you put the pads on, and you have a couple of weeks of pretty intense camp, and then you start to taper it back a little bit, and you get ready for game day, and boom, you play 12 games in 14 weeks or whatnot, and you know the rest. That's the ideal world. That's not an option this year. That's not on the menu. From a coaching standpoint, what's the minimum that you have to have to get a college football team ready to play?
Well, it does depend upon your team and who you are and at which stage are you with. You know, for example, if you're Lane Kiffin, if you're Mike Norvell, if you're a new program, you need more time. You need that teaching time, but you don't have it. So there's nothing we can do about it. Look, ideally, physically, to get them ready, you know, to me, 6 weeks, I think you can do some things and walkthroughs that can help you get better. But I think it's a gradual process, meaning, you know, it is about the off-season conditioning program. It is about the virtual teachings and the work you do in spring. And the fact it's like any learning environment. You know, why do kids go to school for, what is it, like basically 9 months, and they go from, you know, what, 7 to 3? Why don't they just go to school at 6 a.m. and, you know, get taught to 6 or 8 at night and get it done in 4 months? Well, because that's not a great learning environment.
Right.
Because, you know, spreading it out, having time to review the material in addition to learning. Well, the same thing applies in teaching football.
Yeah.
So you've lost that. So now imagine if you're trying to implement a new scheme, you're trying to do things a little differently. It takes that process, you know, and make it different. So it's like teaching a subject in an area that you've taught before and they're a little bit more familiar. So the ones that have a returning scheme and a lot of returning players have an advantage. The ones that do not are at a further disadvantage. So the answer is, you got to modify and simplify and maybe start to adjust a little bit more to what they do and what they've done in the past, because you've not been able to implement what you want. And I do think this, I could be wrong on this. Neil, I think all the coaches, I'm not going to say everyone because they're extenuating circumstances. A lot of coaches are going to get a coronavirus pass this year. You know,
there's no question about it, Chris.
I think people are going to say, well, you know, hey, it's just, well, it was an unusual year. You can do that. But more than that, what booster is going to want to write the big check if their portfolio is doing what it's been doing the past 6 months? And then go out and buy out the staff and go out and bring in a new staff. That's not going to be as easy. So it might be, you know, for a Will Muschamp or somebody that's clearly in a win now or else mode, they might be given another year to kind of figure this out, because it gives you another year to figure out the finances of which we just laid into us. So I think it's going to have an effect, and I think coaches are going to not coach with the idea that, look, I'm good for this year, I'm going to get a pass. But I do think that there's going to be an understanding that you got to be careful. I mean, I will say this, Neil. These schools are not being real transparent. You know this. You're in the media world. I'm a dumb football guy, you know, doing maybe media-related stuff in some parts and doing consulting stuff in other areas. But there are going to be a lot of investigative reporters trying to find out what's going on behind the scenes. And if there is a coach that has found out or an administrator that has found out, to put a player on the field knowingly that he's got the virus and yep. He doesn't take him off, that's a career ender. That's agreed. One of those things that you can survive a 3-win season if you're expected to win 10 games. You're not going to survive something that's going to be that much of a negative press, because if you do that, you're not going to be on the front of the sports page. You're going to be front of the national news, and that's going to be where all the big news channels are going to be camping out, saying, yeah, look, that's the coach that knowingly put, you know where the media is on this, right?
Yes,
or
sir.
Left.
Yep.
So this is where I think everybody kind of understands that we're going to have to roll with the punches, and this will not look, sound, or feel like it normally does, but we're just going to have to deal with it this year.
You know, have you ever run a marathon or a half marathon or anything like that?
No, I can't.
So I've run some marathons, and when you do and you get to the marathon, there's three different types of people at a marathon. There are the people that are trying to win the marathon. There are the people that are trying to set some sort of a time. They're trying to run it in 2.5 hours or 3 hours or, in my case, 4 hours. And then there are the people that I just want to finish. I don't care if I finish in 5 hours. I don't care if I finish in 5 hours and 16 minutes. I just want to finish. This is an achievement, and the achievement is simply getting to the finish line and getting a medal and being able to say, I did it. Nothing's wrong with any of those things. Usually in SEC football, everyone is the first person that we talked about. They're the Kenyans there trying to win the marathon. Mm-hmm. They're there to win. There are very few that are there, you know, hey, I'm gonna try to run this thing in 2:45 and get to the Belk Bowl. That and a few, a little of that, this year, even the ones that are used to going out there trying to win the marathon, their ultimate goal is just to finish the marathon. It's just to get the participation trophy. I agree with you completely. I think the four SEC coaches that are first-year guys, Kiffin and Leach and Drinkwitz and Pittman, I think all four of those guys, they go from it being year one to year zero. There's no doubt in my mind that for Lane Kiffin, the whole rebuild at Ole Miss, whether it works or not, however it goes, it remains to be seen. But that the this year, this 2020 season, assuming it happens, will not in any way be used against him unless, and you just nailed it, unless he did something insanely stupid like ignoring symptoms or whatever and playing sick kids and something terrible happened. That is the only way that it could ever go against him, and which is why I think all these coaches will be pretty smart. And they're even the ones who are so hyper-competitive, I think there will be checks and balances around them to say, hey, remember now, this is not about winning. Because I don't think there's going to be bowl games. I'm not convinced at all there's going to be a playoff and all of that stuff. This is about getting TV money, getting to the finish line, getting the next season and being able to maybe get back to, quote, normal, end quote. I agree with you completely. I think most of these coaches are going to be aware of that at all times.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, if somebody stepped over the line, then they would be fired with cause. So yeah. You're not having to pay them out. So, no, I agree. It's going to be a weird year. Maybe we have a playoff with the last four standing. Maybe it's like, what do you call those Royal Rumble matches?
Yeah.
And, folks, welcome in as
the Marshall,
and Marshall and Tulane, the playoff for the national championship. Congratulations. And, you know, it's a lot of green in the stadium. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen.
All right, let me ask you about Lane Kiffin. I think we've had this conversation a little bit. Kiffin gets the Ole Miss job. He finishes up a recruiting class. They didn't get to have a spring. They didn't get to do all the recruiting that they intended to do, and they intended to do a lot of it. They intended to be very active early in recruiting with official visits and have a very active summer. Obviously, that didn't happen. The dead period's going to go for a while. But just in general, once this is hopefully over at some point and there is some sense of return to normalcy, what kind of a fit do you think Lane Kiffin is at Oxford?
You know, I think it's interesting. I know, I think, first of all, you know, let's approach it a couple of ways, just from both sides. I think Lane is a guy that's very talented. I equate him, the best way to describe him would be a very creative artist. Not, you know, a guy that has a very creative mind. I think he's offensively and he's a very good recruiter. I know he has come with, you know, a lot of controversy in the past. I personally think, in knowing him and knowing his dad for years and years, knowing Lane since he was a kid before he even went to college, that I think Lane has kind of learned how to mature. I think that, you know, I don't want to say things came easy to him, but his success was rewarded early because of his dad's stature. And I think it made him felt a little bit invincible. And so I think, you know, over time he's had some, you know, maybe a humbling experiences to where, you know, I think as maturity sets in, as you learn and grow, I think he has a chance to be a really good head coach. I thought he did a good job in Boca. I think he's a guy that can be an aggressive recruiter and maybe get guys that maybe Ole Miss, you know, at least, you know, pre-Hugh Freeze didn't get consistently. We'll see if he can do that. And I think he's a guy that is capable, once he has things, you know, ingrained, to be able to creatively beat a team that you might not expect, you know, every year or so, and pull an upset. The key is going to be consistency. The key is going to be the maturity. The key is going to be, you know, it's no longer your creative play caller. See, a lot of what happened at Alabama was he was able to be creative, but Nick had him on a short leash. So, you know, when he was going off the reservation, Nick kind of reeled him in before it got completely off the rails. Well, when you're the head coach, you can't do that. And when you're in Boca and you do certain things and you've got a bigger budget than everybody else, and you got Boca to sell, you can do a good job. Now you're at Ole Miss, where you're looking up a lot of great programs in the SEC West. So you're going to have to build something that is, we're going to have to be creative and aggressive in recruiting, but we're going to have to develop very well, and we're going to have to be fundamentally sound, and not, because I think that there's a chance that, you know, they can go to bowl games, maybe pull an upset here or there, but I also think there's the propensity for them to have the knucklehead games, you know, at least the way Lane has coached in the past. With that said, I'm going to repeat again that Lane is still young, learning, growing, and you know, I'm hopeful that it'll work. I know that he's going to be motivated. I think that he wants to be successful. I think he has he has a little bit of wandering eyes. I think he certainly, if he has success, I think that he would have, you know, an interest in maybe at other possibilities. But if he has success here, maybe maturity sets in and says, you know what, I can be successful, go to bowl games, and maybe they don't expect me to win the SEC every year, and maybe that's a good place. I don't know that's what he wants. I don't think that's what he's been all about. But maybe as he get a little older, a little bit mature, which I think he has, at least from my understanding and from my connections, I think there's a chance that he could have some success. I'm hopeful anyway, because I like him. I like his dad. And I certainly would like Ole Miss, like every school, to be successful. And I think it was, you know, it's a tough situation right now. And I still feel awful. I still every day feel bad about you freeze and Ole Miss and what happened there, because I just thought that was such a great fit. And I just thought that was one that was, you know, and I don't mean to go back on it, but in my mind it just does. And, you know, I don't know that Lane is going to be quite as loyal to Ole Miss down the road, but I think he can have success. And with that, that's all Ole Miss can hope for, and hope that maybe he can find a home in Oxford. It's a great place. It's a great job. And let's hope that he can have the success where they want to keep him, and let's hope that he can stay there and grow there.
I get questioned a lot about who the quarterback's going to be if there's a season. Is it going to be Plumlee? Is it going to be Corral? Kiffin has very consistently said, hey, I don't know. I'm going to see what they look like in our practices, in our system, with our coaching, and then go from there. He's obviously not going to have a whole lot of time to make that call. As we referenced a little while ago, it's not going to be the ideal preseason camp, no matter how it unfolds. If you had to sort of handicap that race, knowing what you know about Lane Kiffin, knowing what you know about Jeff Lebby, who would you anticipate would be the quarterback?
I think it's John Rhys Plumlee, but I think it could be a combination. I think that you can't keep a playmaker like him off the field. I think that's going to be his approach. I think he and Ely gives them something that's just going to be tough to defend. I think the other thing that he can do, and listen, no disrespect, but, you know, if you can take a Blake Sims and you could, you know, by motions and formations, create a matchup, you can create some easy throws. And so I think that John Rhys Plumlee, while not being a great passer, can be an effective passer. And I think Lane's a big reason why. So let me just put it to you this way. John Rhys Plumlee needs to be on the field somehow, some way. I just think he's a dynamic playmaker that can turn a game around and give them a chance to win at least a shootout game, you know, just pretty much any time that they play anybody, you know, with maybe a couple of exceptions on their schedule.
Been a lot of buzz here about DJ Durkin, the former Maryland coach, now the defensive coordinator here, along with Chris Partridge. Durkin's a guy that a lot of people have been really impressed with, the people that have encountered him, that have talked to him. I know that it didn't end at Maryland the way that anyone would have wanted it to. He had it going, and then the young man died in the heat stroke incident, and Durkin ultimately paid for that with his job. What's sort of your anticipation for what he can do as a defensive coordinator, and what does he have to do to rehabilitate himself to the point where he would get another opportunity?
I think DJ's a really good coach, really good coach. And I thought he did a good job at Maryland. And I know that blew up, as you said, in the way but I think Maryland has gotten worse since. And, you know, we'll see if Mike Locksley can recruit at a level that maybe can overcome, I think, kind of how they, you know, coach on the field. And I thought his teams were well prepared, well coached, and it was very, very unfortunate for him. Really good coordinator and really good defensive mind. I think he puts guys into positions to make plays. But look, again, if you're an Ole Miss fan, you have to understand that, you know, now you're going to be going up against really good personnel, and the coaching won't be the issue. Do they have enough horses to rush the passer and cover and play the type of defense to stop the elite weapons in this league consistently? And can you balance that? So from his side of the ball standpoint, I think they'll be well coached. But certainly not having the time hurts. That's we've gone over that. But also I think that, you know, I've seen really good coaches not produce really good results on the field. It's about having players and developing those players and utilization of those players. So it's going to come down to that.
You know their personnel pretty well. Sam Williams arrested over the weekend. Who knows what's going to happen? We'll let the legal process play out. Just for the sake of this conversation, he was probably their best defensive player coming back, certainly their best pass rush threat coming back. If he's not available, just how big of a football blow is that to this defense?
Listen, I think it's big. I don't think you have a lot of guys like that. I do think he was certainly the best player on their front coming back. And again, I wish everybody the best in that, and I hope that maybe things are not as they seem, and you know, we'll go from there. But I think he's a really good player. I do think that the group up front, that's an area that needs to be upgraded overall in recruiting. But got some guys that can play. I mean, you know, Anderson and Northern and Hill. I mean, they've got some guys there that at least have some ability. But not what you need to consistently win in the SEC West. So that's going to have to change, in my opinion, on the recruiting cycle. But, you know, you look at their schedule, they've got a few wins on it, at least as far as we know, on games that they're going to play. I mean, a couple of the wins. I mean, I'm trying to remember it, and I should know. I think I put it in my notebook at LandryFootball.com. Connecticut, I think, is – I think they're going to play without fans, or they may not even.
No, Connecticut's play, so they, not. Connecticut's not playing. So,
that's one win you lost there. So,
yeah, and I don't know whether they'll try to. You know, who knows whether our team's trying to replace those games? How does that work? I mean, I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about Southeast Missouri State. It's probably something I need to start really looking into. That's Ole Miss's home opener. They're scheduled to play Baylor on September the 6th in Houston. Kind of hard to imagine that happening now, but. You know, that game could be rescheduled, presumably. I don't know. Their schedule's weird. You know, it's like everybody else. It's people keep saying, when are you going to write a lot of preview stuff? And it's like, well, I mean, I don't really know what it is I'm previewing yet. That's why, you know, I'd love for Sankey or whoever to come down with an announcement on Friday or whenever. And so we can go, okay, they're playing, and here's the schedule, and here's what it looks like. And it's right now, even when you talk to people just kind of off the record, as you know, the answers to so many questions are, I don't know.
Right. No, that's exactly right.
I talked to somebody at Auburn inside their program, and I was asking questions, and literally after a while he goes, "Hey, Neil, I mean, I know you don't believe me, but the answer is I have no clue." And I'm like, "Really?" And he goes, "Yeah, no clue. We're waiting. We're waiting to be told."
Yeah. It's just simple enough right there.
I'm going to jump to the pro game in a minute and get some thoughts on what this might look like with different guys opting out and that kind of thing. But I'm going to ask you a high school football question because he's down there in your area. He's just a high school sophomore, so a long way to go. But what have you heard about Arch Manning? Have you seen Arch Manning? What's the incredibly early scuttlebutt on Cooper Manning's son?
I have met him. I have seen him. I don't know. In fact, I always go to the usually speak at the Manning Passing Academy. Not. I don't even know if they're having it this year. But I'm assuming they're not because I haven't really heard anything, and I wouldn't be going anyway. But you know, he's very talented, and I don't know. It'll be interesting. I don't know the kid well enough to know that, you know, I'm sure he's going to have his own mind. I don't know if it's, you know, obviously, of course, all your listeners know that's Cooper's son. So, other than Peyton, everybody's going to Ole Miss. So I think certainly they'll be in the mix. But he's really, really talented. But I don't know. I don't know where he'll see things. I think probably like any of them, he'll, you know, if he's got those genes, he'll probably want to be very thorough about where he wants to go, what he wants to do, and who's going to be coaching and how that's going to play out. So that's going to be interesting. But he's very, very talented, advanced. I stay away from the, well, he's a lot like Eli, he's a lot like Peyton. He's a really talented young guy, but very, very young, and it is a couple of years away.
To the pro game a little bit, last few minutes I've got with you here. Dante Hightower, probably the latest player to announce that he's opting out of the season. I saw with the Bears had someone out. The Chiefs have an offensive lineman out. It appears that, unlike in baseball, where a very small group of players opted out, and in the NBA where, gosh, you could count them on one hand, the players that opted out, it appears that there's going to be more NFL players opting out. Does that surprise you? And then if not, what's sort of your anticipation for what we're looking at here?
I can't say that I'm surprised, because the theme of this conversation is I don't know what the heck to expect. I mean, I really don't. I mean, so I was aware that there may be some players that will opt out. I don't know what to expect, how many. I don't know what percentage. So I guess when it all settles, I may have to think about, is this really surprising? I'm so much, you know, in wonderment about what's going to happen that nothing really surprises me anymore. I completely understand, you know, certain player situations. I also understand what the league's intent is. And I've always felt like the NFL has a better chance of pulling it off, because you've got an NFL and NFLPA. And see, I always thought, I'm not saying I expected them to do this, but I always thought that, you know, a couple of months ago, I thought, well, they're just going to quarantine the players and the staff, and they're going to be in a hotel, and that's how they're going to do it. Well, they're not doing that. So now it makes me wonder how they're going to get through this and how they're going to work it. And so I think it's going to have a tremendous impact on the season. Think about this for a second. I mean, if you're Matthew Stafford and your wife's a twice breast cancer survivor, and I don't know her, I'm not a medical person, but I mean, that's got to be a tough decision. He's made a ton of money. I mean, is that something that, I mean, what does he do? Does he quarantine from her? Is it safe? I don't know. I'm speculating, because a lot of guys have to make those decisions, and a lot of them have kids that maybe have illnesses, and they've got some real life decisions to make. So I'm not going to be surprised by what anybody does on anything.
You know, for older guys, the prospect of a lost season closes the window even more. I think about Tom Brady in Tampa. I think about Drew Brees in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's the stuff that you kind of don't, you just assume that when those seasons end, that they get another opportunity. They're in New Orleans, which I know you're not far from there. You know a lot of people in the Saints. Is there a sense of what this would mean if this season? I mean, Drew Brees has had kind of a weird offseason with his mm-hmm. comments with the social media stuff and the players that got on him, and then he apologized. And I mean, he's been such a part of that franchise for so long, but he's in his 40s, I guess his early 40s. He's not getting any younger, obviously. How much longer does Drew Brees have? And if this ended up being something like a lost season, how much closer to the end would that push him?
I think this is his last year, but if we miss a season, I don't know that he'd maybe consider another year. I don't know. Certainly the wear and tear wouldn't be there, but you know that the preparation and everything that he does, that these guys, they love playing. The work is the off season and getting ready. So he's doing that. He may not want to go through that again. I don't know. I fully believe this was going to be his last year, you know, and will be his last year if he plays and we have a season. If there's not, I don't know if that changes his mind. I don't know that he's probably run through that his mind enough to have the answer himself. And he hasn't announced it, but everything I've just felt like this is going to be his last year. The other thing I don't know is what type of, verbal agreement he's got with NBC, because he's got a job lined up. He's going to do the – I think he's going to be involved in maybe doing the Notre Dame games and, eventually be the guy – I think they're talking about him being the guy that's going to replace Chris Collinsworth on NBC on Sunday Night Football, probably with Mike Tirico, because as Michaels and I think that's what they're thinking. So he's already got a career lined up. Now, is how do they feel, and what have they talked about? We're good with you, playing another year, and we can do this. That probably is going to have an impact on whether he would come back for another year or not. But if he plays, I think this is it. That's my gut feeling, one way or the other, whether they finish close or don't. I think that's it if he plays.
We've seen Major League Baseball with no fans last 4 or 5 days. We've seen some NBA with no fans in an exhibition format. They resume the regular season on Thursday in Orlando in the bubble that you mentioned. It looks different, but basketball's a much different feel, a court and all that kind of stuff. What do you think an NFL season, what does an NFL game on television look like with no fans? And what would, if it comes to that, and I think there's a really decent chance that it does, what kind of a product does the NFL have? Is it still every bit as appealing?
Oh, not every bit as appealing, but I think it's going to have less of an effect than college football. I mean, I think that their environments, and there are a lot of good ones, the Superdome's one, but certainly Green Bay and Kansas City, there are a lot of good NFL environments, but they make a majority of their money through television, which is why they want to play, and they're going to lose money at the gate, and it's going to hurt. But playing by hook or by crook is going to allow them that television money that is something that they don't want to, be without. So how does it look? I mean, I think what's really going to be bad in my mind is I think it's going to sound really bad on college, because college is about the bands and the atmosphere and the crowd. And I just think that's going to be hollow. I think the NFL, you can get away with it. I think they'll probably won't show, well, what would have been crowd shots. I don't think they'll show. I mean, I think they'll do things. I just think that the NFL is, maybe more centered around TV. And I think they're in better position to accomplish this than, say, college football. What? That's my view on it. But it's going to cost some money. There's no question about it. But that's why having something is better than nothing in the eyes of all the owners, because they need it. They need a gate. And think about you got new stadiums this year in Los Angeles, which you got two teams going to be at home in that new Los Angeles stadium, and then Las Vegas. And probably doesn't matter if they're done now, because it won't matter. They have all the time in the world to work on it. Because you've got that, and you got all that expenditures, and you're looking at best next year before we can start to have fans in the stadium, it does appear.
Chris, as always, man, I really appreciate the time. Please tell my listeners how they can get your work. I know you have you've kind of launched a new yep. Twitch show that I'm going to be on here the next couple of days. How can people see that?
Absolutely. First of all, just go to LandryFootball.com, and we basically provide a lot of film room analysis on the college and pro game there. We've got a paywall, but we've got a lot of free stuff. Check it out. You're going to love it. It's called less than a magazine subscription for the scouting and coaching analysis of the college and pro game. But yes, we have formed the Landry Football Network, and it is a network of podcast/Twitch television shows. If you don't know what Twitch is, you can go to LandryFootball.com, and they've got a big banner that says follow Chris on Twitch. Click on that. It'll take you to the Chris Landry Football Twitch channel. And what it is you'll be able to listen to these podcasts as we're doing it. We've got a podcast for every college conference, an SEC, an ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the Pac-12. We've got a recruiting show. We've got a high school Friday night football show. We've got an NFL show 3 hours every night from 9 to 12 Eastern time. We're going to have two fantasy shows. We've got a couple of syndicated programs throughout the South that are going to be on. So in essence, that channel is going to have 24/7 football content where you're going to have breakdown and matchup type shows. We're going to have talk shows, and you're going to want to go out there, folks, and get into the chat room and, you know, communicate and tell the host what you like, what you don't like, and ask questions. It's going to be a blast. So we're really excited and bringing a lot of people involved. So check it all out at LandryFootball.com, the best way to find out all the information.
Awesome. I look forward to checking it out myself. Chris, thanks so much for the time. Best of luck. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Neil.
Bye. Again, our thanks to Chris Landry of Landry Football. Hope you enjoyed both of today's Oxford Exxon podcast. Josh Hendrickson, Chris Landry, kind enough to give us combined a little more than 2 hours of their time. Really nice of them. We appreciate it. I hope you all enjoyed it as well. Chase Parham and I will be back with the Hand Raise guys on Thursday, about 4 p.m. Central Daylight Time. We'll look forward to taking your calls. We'll be on our YouTube channel, and then we'll make that show available for you in podcast form on Friday morning. So until then, take care, stay safe, talk to you soon.